This is Jordan Seculo. Congress attempts to repeal Obamacare one final time this year.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulo Live.
This is a choice between socialism and federalism, our last best chance. And Donald Trump has done everything in his power to pass this bill. A vast majority of Republican governors are on board. They want the money. They want the power. They want to get health care out of Washington. They want to do it themselves. And I guarantee patients in this country will do better.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
We have seen some very, very hopeful sprouts of bipartisanship in the last month. Going back to this Trump Care 2, Graham Cassidy would shut down that bipartisanship that America yearns for.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulo.
Folks, just to make sure you understand, this is not a replay, a time warp, but we are again talking about yet another deadline and the repeal attempt of Obamacare once again. This time, it's the Graham-Cassidy-Heller-Johnson bill. It's been known as Graham-Cassidy, but that again, it includes some important senator from Nevada who was not as helpful in the previous rounds of attempting to appeal Obamacare. He's actually on this, so you can check him officially off the list. It's down to basically, here we go again, a handful of U.S. senators. You got Rand Paul, kind of in his unique libertarian world in the U.S. Senate. He was called out by President Trump on Twitter this morning. He said, Rand Paul is a friend of mine, but he is such a negative force when it comes to fixing health care. Graham Cassidy bill is great. It ends Obamacare. We're going to get into all the policy behind what this legislation entails, because here we have, folks, a deadline of about a week and a half. The Senate must act by next Friday or Saturday. That's the 29th or 30th. And then the House can vote this. We don't expect the House vote to be too difficult. What we're expecting, again, is that the real fight is in the U.S. Senate. Can Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell actually get Republicans, and not even all of them, but 50 of them, so that Vice President Pence can cast that 51st vote? That question still remains in the air. What does not remain in question is the defunding of Planned Parenthood. It still continues to keep that defunding very clearly, and I know that's important to many of you. We're going to get into all parts of this legislation in the show today, draft legislation, but it completely defunds Planned Parenthood and all abortion providers. It does it in two key ways. It defines them as prohibited entities for 1 year, denying them all federal funds under the plan, bars any plan that covers abortion from reimbursement under the Small Employer Health Insurance Expense Credit. And folks, Planned Parenthood is already out with fundraising emails. If you're watching on Facebook and Periscope, I've got it in my hand. And they use the language. They call it, this toxic bill will defund Planned Parenthood, using language similar to what we use. And they put defund in quotes. But then again, folks, that's kind of an endorsement of the legislation for me. When Planned Parenthood says it's going to defund Planned Parenthood, I say I'd vote yes on this legislation. It may not be perfect. It may not be everything we want. But folks, we're running out of time here to actually repeal Obamacare. We have a shot. We have it's far from a done deal, because we wouldn't be talking about a deadline of the next Friday or Saturday. But I wanted to give you all time to get up to speed on this as we edge closer and closer to a potential vote. So many other issues have taken attention. We're going to take your phone calls about it today, 1-800-684-3110. We're really going to get into the weeds. We're going to explain legislatively with our Director of Government Affairs, Dan Bennett, where this stands with the votes in the U.S. Senate. This is not a bipartisan compromise. Let me be clear here. We're not expecting Democrat crossover votes for this. This would be purely a Republican vote in the United States Senate as it stands today. We want to take your calls. We want to take your comments through Facebook and Periscope. Also, though, through the radio broadcast. Join us on the air by calling our toll-free number, 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Yet another attempt to defund Planned Parenthood, to repeal Obamacare. And as you heard in the opening of the show, Senator Lindsey Graham said the president has done everything he can to get Obamacare done. This is now up to those Republican leaders. They have not been very good at doing this so far, but we hope that changes. Logan, tell people how to get involved.
That's right. Give us a call right now, 1-800-684-3110. Watch streaming online, Facebook, Periscope, at Jay Sekulo, at Jordan Sekulo, and on ACLJ.org.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks, from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
All right, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. And again, I'm saying, you know, I will prove this to you by saying I think that right now the Vice President, Mike Pence, is speaking at the UN Security Council. You can check that out, because this is not a replay. We are live, folks, and we are talking about yet another attempt at repealing Obamacare. Logan, can you believe it? Yet again.
No, we're talking about it again. It's
is John McCain going to provide the vote? Yeah, Lisa Murkowski. The senators we never want to have to rely on, we yet have to rely on again. But if Mitch McConnell is a leader, he will figure out, he should be able, he's supposed to be this chess master. So far, he's been losing a lot of chess matches. Yeah. I mean, the only time he's won is when he changed the rules to get through, like, Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, and that was pretty easy. But when it comes to the real chess work, it's getting the Murkowskis and the McCains to sign on to this, and he's got even a bonus that a lot of times you don't have. You got a vice president who's ready to stand with you and cast that 51st vote if necessary. I mean, it tells you how weak leadership is in the Republican Senate, especially, that they are almost certainly going to have to rely on Vice President Pence, who is the president of the Senate and has the right to cast the tie-breaking vote. But the fact that as a Republican majority, they still have to rely on that, it tells you a lot. Yes, it's a big tent party, not as narrowly minded as the Democrat Party oftentimes, but I sure sometimes wish these conservatives would act a little bit more like Democrats when it comes to these tough votes and just get it done. Now, you hear the scaremongering on the left. Chuck Schumer, he's saying, oh, this is absurd. They're trying to do this in the middle of the night. We have been talking about repealing Obamacare for nearly a decade. I mean, it's seven or eight years we've been talking about getting rid of this. We were talking about getting rid of it before they even officially passed it. Then we tried to get rid of it in the courts. That didn't work. So we've been waiting for a Republican president. We've had these Republican majorities in the House and the Senate. I am not worried about how fast this is moving. It has moved way too slow when you have this kind of leadership. But I want to go to Than Bennett right now, because Than, give us an update from Washington, D.C. We haven't this is kind of the first show we've really given people and really gotten to the heart of it. Of this legislation, but I want to just lay it out before we get into the policies within it. Let's lay out exactly where it stands politically. It does have more early support than other attempts at this.
It does, Jordan. Let me just say this initially. The only reason there's even a shot at this is because there was a budget deal struck a couple of weeks ago. And we said that on this broadcast, that one of the good things about not doing a deadline work in Congress is it freed up the calendar to do some other things. This Obamacare repeal under reconciliation would be that other thing, Jordan. We talked about this during the break, but the deadline for using the reconciliation process, which only requires 50 votes, is September 30th. That is next Saturday. We expected to use this week and next week on a budget deal. That budget deal is done. And so now this option, which put together by, as you said, Lindsey Graham and Bill Cassidy, also Dean Heller and Ron Johnson, those were two key votes the last time around. It has the calendar time, Jordan. Now the question is, does it have the votes? Rand Paul has already said he's a no. Every expectation is that Susan Collins is a no. That means you need every single other Republican to vote for it, including John McCain, who voted for the last one, and I think most significantly, Lisa Murkowski. Why is she most significant, Jordan? It's because she did not vote for any version of the repeal the last time around. So I think you have to get Lisa Murkowski's vote. But if you do, there is space in the calendar to get this done before that reconciliation window expires.
All right, and that is by not this Friday, but next Friday, Saturday. So it's the 29th, 30th of September. I don't think we're at a point yet where we want to start flooding Lisa Murkowski's phone lines, but I think we want to start getting this out there, the information about it. And then she has not said no. So, I mean, Than, maybe I'll ask you this. Is it time to start before she starts putting out statements?
I think it's time to make sure that she's actually reading the details of the bill and understanding what's in it. I mean, to be fair, it's new, Jordan. And, well, it's not new. The premise has been there. But the fact that there's going to be a vote on it, that is a new development. And I'll just say this. The hearing on this is going to be Monday in the Senate Finance Committee. I think after that hearing, Jordan, that's the appropriate time to absolutely flood her with asking for a position. We don't want to be surprised on the Senate floor again.
No.
Let's get a response from her before that day comes.
All right, folks. So right now, we're in our education mode, if we will, and we're going to do a lot of that today in a fun way, but let you know what's in this.
Making education fun.
Yeah, exactly. Don't want to scare listeners away. But you want to know what's in this, right? I mean, it's called the Graham Cassidy bill. What's in it? You hear talk heads talk about it for 3 minutes at a time on cable news.
Right.
It's a little tough to figure out. So we've got it broken down for you, and we will do that. But I want to take some phone calls as well, because this does have the key language of defunding Planned Parenthood in it. So one of our callers picked up on, though. Hey, why is that only for a year? But let's take that call.
Okay, we're going to go to line. Which line did you want to go to? It's two?
Yep.
Let's go to Christian in Phoenix, Arizona, on line two.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. How you doing?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to first off let you know that ACLJ, the entire staff, Jordan, Jay, everyone, really a godsend and really living, walking angels for the president. You all really defend the president, and everyone in MAGA really, really, really appreciate you guys.
Hey, thank you. So, thank you, Christian.
Yep. Yeah.
Logan just pumped his fist.
My question is,
don't say that.
and so my question is, so in this bill, there are prohibitions, and the prohibitions for Planned Parenthood, the way the language reads, it's only for 1 year. So my question is, does the president have the executive power to renew the prohibitions so that they don't kick back in again, and then we have to go through this entire exercise again and again?
No, I get you. Now, remember, we're using not a normal legislative vehicle. We're using reconciliation. That's why, Christian, we don't have to get to 60 votes to get this legislation voted on, which would never happen. You're not going to get 8 Democrats to cross over and vote to even allow a vote on legislation like this, especially one that would include the defunding of Planned Parenthood. But then that is noteworthy. I want to explain it to people. It's Planned Parenthood defunded for 1 year. How would that be each year? I mean, because it's a budget reconciliation, I would assume you would have to go through that process. But if you get the vote the first time, depending on, I mean, always these funding issues come down to how elections turn out. I mean, that's always the case with any kind of legislation, even a reconciliation. But I'm guessing that it would have to go through the budgetary process in a year from now.
It would. It's a great question. It's important for people to understand. If you're using the reconciliation process, the only thing you can get at is 1 year's worth of mandatory spending. That's why it's a prohibition for applying for Medicaid dollars. So it works out to about $400 million a year for Planned Parenthood. So yes, this would be an item on the agenda when next year's spending levels were are going to be debated. But I would argue this, Jordan. How much easier would it be to make the case that we should not give Planned Parenthood an increase when they're currently getting zero than it is now arguing for a cut of more than $400 million? So it is everything we can get under reconciliation. And I actually don't think the fact that it's only a 1 year is a knock. We as pro-lifers should be willing to go to the mat and argue against an increase for Planned Parenthood next year.
Yeah, I totally agree with Than. It's very difficult legislatively to defund Planned Parenthood. I mean, we've seen that before because of the legislative filibuster and getting things through that. So when you've got a vehicle like reconciliation that you can utilize and strip away, at least for this year, and likely for future years to come, so long as President Trump is in office, hundreds of millions of dollars. Planned Parenthood put it in their own email. We will be defunded. I mean, for me, that's a yes vote. Right. But then for people like Lisa Murkowski, that may be why they start wavering, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins have offered an amendment before to strip that language out. They may do it again, and they're entitled to. But I would just say to Lisa Murkowski, if she votes no on this, as every other bill, she's choosing Obamacare. So I think she needs to look at the benefit for Alaska, not just on the life issue. That's obviously very important to us. But does she want her constituents saddled with Obamacare? And Jordan, you know this better than I do, but within just a couple of years, her constituents aren't going to have a choice. And what's that going to lead to? It's going to lead to single payer. It's just a matter of time.
This is how we kill single payer. I mean, yep. And I think that Senator Graham is right. Let's play that bite again. This is a choice between basically block granting money. We're going to explain all this. We got a second half hour of the show, and we're going to really get into the policy so that you can explain this to your friends and your family. But block granting to the states having the power to really do their job. And that's why I think some governors have opposed it, is because they'd then be responsible. Oh, no, you mean your state governor would actually have to govern? They're not just a figurehead who gets to have a nice house and sign legislation but not have to worry about actually their people's health care. But take a listen to Senator Lindsey Graham, because I think this is right on when you talk about the choice here.
This is a choice between socialism and federalism, our last best chance. And Donald Trump has done everything in his power to pass this bill. A vast majority of Republican governors are on board. They want the money. They want the power. They want to get health care out of Washington. They want to do it themselves. And I guarantee patients in this country will do better.
Federalism versus socialism. So that's what Lisa Murkowski needs to think about. That's what John McCain needs to think about. Remember the president's remarks yesterday at the UN about Venezuela. Socialism, it wasn't wrongly implemented in Venezuela. It's implemented correctly, and that's what happens. Rations of food, food shortages, shortages of everything, and a crumbling infrastructure. That's what happens under real socialism, and we don't want that. We want states to have the ability to have flexibility for their people. But, of course, that means that the states would have to actually govern their individuals. Logan, tell people how to get involved.
That's right. You can give us a call. Two lines are open, 1-800-684-3110.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. So we've talked about politically where is Graham, Cassidy, Heller, Johnson bill stands. This is the another attempt at the repeal of Obamacare by the U.S. Senate. Here's some key differences between what this legislation does and what Obamacare does. First, this legislation would give the states $1.1 trillion more dollars in block grant funding. That means it would be up to the state you live in ultimately to decide a lot of the priorities of where to utilize these funds so that insurance costs go down, to decide what coverage is essential. And each state is different across the country. Everybody who's traveled knows that. So there's different issues posing to different states. It also would allow, you know, the left-leaning blue states, sorry if you're in one of those, to retain much of Obamacare if they would like to. But at the state level, it would be a federalist decision. They would be the ones deciding, and we all choose what states to live in our country. You're not forced to live there. Sometimes work and jobs, but it could be one of those issues where people start deciding where they live based off the benefit, based off how their states govern healthcare. And that's not such a bad thing. People do that with taxes and other issues as well. Second, well, as we said, it gives the states a lot more freedom to decide how to spend the money. There's no built-in penalty for not having insurance. So there's no individual mandate or employer mandate. That is very key for everybody. So that's kind of like the top line issues. And Logan, let's take a call, but I wanted to get that. And we're going to go line by line. We've kind of outlined a number of different, went through the Medicaid expansion, the individual employer mandates, the subsidies and taxes. We're going to get to all of that in the second half hour of the broadcast, the waivers, the defunding of Planned Parenthood, which we have talked about, even health savings accounts. So all of this, I think, is important to cover, and we will, but I also want to take your phone calls at 1-800-684-3110 to talk to us on the air.
Yeah, let's go to Robert. I think a question a lot of people have in Wisconsin on line one.
Hey, Robert.
Hello.
Go ahead with your question.
God bless you guys for what you're doing over there. My question is, I'm looking at the website here, and I see the term final attempt to repeal Obamacare.
Yeah.
I guess my question is this really the final that is – despite all the rigmarole that we've had and may have the second time around, even if this one falters, can we not keep trying? Can the Republicans?
You can keep trying. It would be next year, correct, Dan?
Well, under a reconciliation, that window is going to close on September 30th. You could keep trying this year, Jordan, but you need 60 votes in the regular order. That's the deadline we're talking about.
You're never going to get past that legislative hurdle right now. The midterm elections in 2018, which is a long way away still, that's not going to get you past that hurdle. Democrats are going to be able to keep that in place. When would reconciliation potentially be available again, Than? Just so people know.
Well, yeah, no, there's a budget resolution passing now that has reconciliation instructions in it, Jordan, but it's they're reconciliation instructions for tax reform. So you're talking about a year from now before being able to pass a new budget with new reconciliation instructions.
So that's what we're talking about, Robert, is at least a year. And when you start letting these entitlement programs, even if they are not good, continue. There's these questions that the government will have to answer is do we, because it's failing so poorly, are we going to have to prop the system up? And that is what we've seen through other entitlement programs in the past. Instead of reform, instead of repeal, instead of replacement, we prop up programs that continue to cost us unbelievable amounts of money to the American taxpayer. We keep propping them up and propping them up and propping them up. And that's why anybody discusses Social Security reform, everybody runs away from it. Many conservatives do as well. You talk about Medicaid or Medicare changes, and people run away from it because once they have their programs, they don't like reforming it, even if it won't affect them. Like on Social Security, even if it affected only people who are under the age of 38 right now, that people still who would have no effect from any of the changes would be worried. And so that's why these entitlement programs and that include, you know, taxes, penalties, and all of that are so important that if you don't believe that they are what's best for the country, you've got to get rid of them quickly or else they hang around for a long time and we start bailing them out and continue to bail them out. Give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. Logan, let's take another call or comment.
All right, let's go to Dennis, who's calling on line 3 in Connecticut, and I'll take some comments. Dennis, you're on the air.
How you doing, Jordan? Hey, I love your show, guys. Listen to it regular. My wife and I are one of those people that are paying $1,700 a month with a $12,000 deductible apiece. And we just got a love letter saying our insurance is going up 30%. And thank God we're healthy. Here's the question. This appeal, you know and I know, is never going to happen. It's not going to happen. Once somebody gets something for free, what's the chances of taking it back? My question to the panel today is, could they do, Jordan, a fix? Could they say, hey, we're going to take this group of people and we're going to make a fix for them? Is that something that could happen?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. I think that, Dennis, this, you are the main issue of what people are talking about when they say this system is getting to a point where, Dennis, you may be in a position, and I'm sure it's not easy, certainly, to be putting together $1,700 a month each for insurance, and you're healthy. You're healthy with a $12,000 deductible. You basically don't have insurance unless you spend upwards of, what is it, over $32,000, Dennis, and then you actually get, like, real insurance. I mean, this is absurd. Should there be a fix just for you? Democrats aren't going to do it for you, Dennis. You live in a bluer of blue states in Connecticut. Now, if the governor of your state has to start fixing things, then I think it gets better even in the blue states. So this legislation does focus then on folks like Dennis, who are basically, and I can't imagine how many people are even in Dennis's position where they can afford that anymore. Better to just pay the few $100 penalty for many folks who just cannot afford what Dennis is paying, which is, as a couple, nearly $4,000 a month with a $12,000 deductible.
Well, as bad as what Dennis just described is, Jordan, it's only going to get worse under Obamacare because the competition is going away, and that just by the rules of economic reality is going to drive prices up. So as bad as that $32,000 a year is, it's going to get worse. And I would just say this, maybe one of the chances that this has of passing is a reason that, you know, it's something that I don't necessarily like about it, that the size and the scope and the spending is largely unchanged, Jordan. But you're right. It shifts it to the states to decide. So hopefully it would be better used. And then something we can't forget, it also removes the coercion, Jordan. You're no longer forced to buy a product that you do not want, which we continue to think is unconstitutional despite the Supreme Court's ruling. Obviously, you have to abide by it. But the fact that the help available for people like Dennis and others is still in the bill, quite honestly, Jordan, that probably makes it more likely to pass.
All right, folks, coming up in the second half hour of the broadcast, we continue to take your calls and your comments at 1-800-684-3110. We're going to bring in our director of policy, Harry Hutchinson, to walk through some of the specifics here so that you can be informed when people are having this debate over the next week and a half, that you know what you're talking about, that your friends who may ask you questions about it or may say, I don't like this, or should I like this? You'll be able to answer their questions after this next half hour of the broadcast, and we'll continue to take live calls and answer your questions. Take your comments as well at 1-800-684-3110. There's a way, in case you want to change up the way you're viewing the broadcast as well, Logan, tell people how they can do that.
That's right. You can find us broadcasting online, video and audio, ACLJ.org, for another half hour. Archived later on, you can find us on the ACLJ app, available in the App Store for iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, or ACLJ Roku channel, available in the Roku channel marketplace. You can also find us broadcasting live right now, like I said, on Facebook. Facebook.com/JSeculo. Twitter at Jordan Seculo today. At JSeculo typically as well. Follow me at Logan Seculo. You can follow all we do at ACLJ.org. Keep updated because we got 30 more minutes of live broadcast coming up just for you. And if you watch online, you get continual show, no commercials, and exclusive videos. Right back with more on JSeculo Live.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
One thing before we get back into the healthcare discussion about the president's speech yesterday at the UN, when he focused in on Iran, he talked about the how dangerous, of course, the funding of terrorism, the nuclear program, really calling them out as bad actors, as past presidents have done, really other than President Obama. But you had the Iranian foreign minister and call what the president's remarks. One, not worthy of a response, and medieval, in what he called not appropriate in the 21st century. So I saw a tweet from Brett Baer, and I think he hit the nail on the head immediately. This is a foreign minister for a country that has a supreme leader who oversees everything, who is not elected by the people. So they have a president, they have this executive branch, but then there's a guardian council of mullahs, who choose a supreme leader, and everyone bows down to the supreme leader, who then, you know, has got this interesting, because it's Shia Islam, different relationship as a religious guardian of Islam. I mean, talk about not living. They hang people in Iran as their method of execution, regularly political opponents as well. To take a listen, I just wanted to bring this up because it we've done so much work fighting back against Iranian imprisonment of Americans and religious minorities. Now they're posing a major threat to the world, and there's that nuclear deal deadline coming up. We're going to get right back to healthcare, don't worry. But remember what President Trump said, Bite 20.
And above all, Iran's government must stop supporting terrorists, begin serving its own people, and respect the sovereign rights of its neighbors. The entire world understands that the good people of Iran want change, and other than the vast military power of the United States, that Iran's people are what their leaders fear the most.
So the foreign minister of the Islamic Republic of Iran, this is the actual tweet. I'll read it for you. Yes, he is on Twitter. Verified account. Foreign Minister Zarif. Trump's, so he doesn't call him president. Now imagine if we called, the Ayatollah, I don't know what is it like, I mean, I guess Khomeini, if you just put Khomeini, like Khomeini, but or their president, whatever their presence is. But Trump's ignorant hate speech belongs in medieval times. I mean, this is laughable coming out of Iran. A leadership in a country which was very modern, but has taken its people back to as close as they can get to medieval times. I mean, they are oppressive. The people hang from the, in the streets with cranes. Yeah. So I guess they use modern technology
for medieval warfare,
medieval executions. Yep. They oppress political opponents. They have a supreme leader who is unelected, chosen by a group called the Guardian Council. Does that sound medieval to you? It sounds like Game of Thrones to me. I mean, it's, yep. this is medieval times that they're living in. But they, and again, you know, you can make these comments to the President of the United States, but you're still little Iran. Let's be honest. And little Iran could be crushed very quickly if necessary. We don't want to have to do that. What really got under his skin, though, is that the president praised the Iranian people.
Right.
And what he said in that tweet was that he said it's not the 21st century UN, unworthy of a reply, fake empathy for Iranians fools no one. That is what strikes fear in the heart of the Iranian regime, is that they have oppressed their people like a medieval empire. Medieval religious empire, and their people have risen up before. This is a president who just signaled at the UN that if they do rise up, may actually get support, unlike under the Obama administration during the Green Revolution, when people were saying, please help our protests, please support our attempt to overthrow the government, and the Obama administration sided with the Iranian government, which tells you so much about where they were, and thank God we're no longer dealing with that administration. We come back. We are going to be getting into and back into the specifics of healthcare, Logan, and taking people's calls and questions about it. We're bringing our policy team in too. We got through the politics of it. I could not ignore what the Iranian foreign minister said about our president because of the foreign policy speech yesterday at the UN, obviously. But we're going to answer people's questions on healthcare and get into the policy side of it.
Absolutely. Yep. You can give us a call. A couple lines are open, 1-800-684-3110. And there are lots of comments coming in. We'll take some of those during the break. We also have exclusive video coming up in the break. In this situation, you'll be able to see that coming in with the, is it the UN speech in the video? Yes, you'll look to see clips from President Trump's UN speech coming up in the break if you're watching online.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation, the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org. It's a fact. Radical jihadists have one goal: complete and utter global domination. Hundreds of lives have been lost in devastating jihadist attacks from Paris to San Bernardino, Brussels to Orlando. Islamic terrorist attacks are increasingly occurring at an alarming rate. In his number one New York Times bestselling book, Rise of ISIS, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow pulled back the curtain on a new unholy alliance of Iranians, Russians, and jihadists waging war against the United States and our very way of life. Now in his new book, Unholy Alliance, Jay reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. Get Jay Sekulow's new book, Unholy Alliance, the agenda Iran, Russia, and jihadists share for conquering the world. It's available now. Available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also order it right now online at unholyalliancebook.com.
All right, so we have explained a lot about this healthcare vote politically, you know, how it shapes up right now. The deadline really is next Friday or Saturday, 29th or 30th of September in the Senate. The House could vote later. No one is expecting that to be too difficult if it actually gets through the Senate. Now, I say that with so many words of caution, because in this environment, with attempting to repeal Obamacare, things that would look easy have gotten hard. Those that seemed impossible or that they will not happen yet keep rising back from the dead or attempting to rise back from the dead. And I think that's what you see here with this yet again an attempt to repeal Obamacare. As a positive, I hope it's a Lazarus moment where this attempt does move forward. But I want to bring in Harry Hutchinson from our policy team. We'll go to Than Bennett as well. But Harry, this is not exactly the same as what proposals have been in the past to repeal Obamacare. Are you confident saying, though, it is a repeal?
I'm confident in saying it is a repeal, but I would say it's only a partial repeal, because the new bill still retains many of the Obamacare taxes, and it retains, if you will, the outline of Obamacare. But it does return power, and this is very important, to the states. States are allowed to experiment. Funds are block granted to states. And so healthcare in New York and will look very different from healthcare in Alabama. In addition, and this is also very, very important, it equalizes funding between states. Right now, four states receive disproportionate funding under Obamacare: Maryland, New York, Massachusetts, and the fourth one just left my mind. But essentially, that makes no sense. I think it's California.
Yeah.
I think the Graham-Cassidy bill is an important step forward. However, we also should keep in mind that there are many forces within the status quo who are marshaling their power to block this.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, some of those forces are indeed Republicans.
Yeah.
And I would certainly list at the forefront of that list John Kasich of Ohio, who opposes essentially any reform effort, partly because he likes unlimited Medicaid expansion. Up to 25% of Ohioans are currently on Medicaid.
Yeah.
With respect to healthcare. That
yeah.
makes no sense.
Yeah, I mean, this is, again, you realize why when some opponents of this have said, well, look at some of these Republican governors, and then you see the states they are in. They're in the swing states or even blue states. A Maryland governor, as you said, Harry, they already get more money from Obamacare, so of course they don't want to change. It's different for them. In Ohio, where they're already on this kind of federal state a mixed program, and you got 25% of an aging population taking advantage of that or taking advantage of it because of income level. So ultimately here, though, what do we have policy-wise? I agree with you. I think the biggest part of this to me, I'll go to Than Bennett first, then we'll take a call. Before we get into couple of the top-line specifics that we haven't yet hit. Well, Than, there's two things that are very important to me. One, defunding Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood's got their fundraising email out. I mean, that's enough for me to vote yes on a piece of legislation right there. Unfortunately, the Republicans who say they're pro-life have not been that easy to convince in the U.S. Senate. But, okay, that's part one. Part two is that I don't think this is the end game on health care. I think we have to get the ball rolling on repeal. And when we do that, we're going to have a lot more flexibility, a lot more options available to working within Congress, because Democrats, specifically some of the more moderate Democrats, once this is gone, have got to deal within the new system. And when they have to deal within the new system, they're going to be willing to play ball. But they're not going to play ball until you kind of clear the field once. And that's what this would do.
Couldn't agree with you more, Jordan. There are three main reasons that I would be an easy yes on this. The first is doing away with the mandates. I cannot tell you how important that is to eliminate the coercive force of Obamacare that Obamacare created. The second is Planned Parenthood and the Hyde-like protections that are attached in this bill. Jordan, on that point, this bill is stronger on life than any of the previous versions have been. And number three, it's to the conversation that you just had with Harry and John Kasich specifically. Look, if a governor like John Kasich is not willing to take the Medicaid expansion dollars that, quite frankly, I think a lot of them should be eliminated. I think the size of this should be toned down. This bill doesn't do that. This bill takes those dollars and sends them back to him for him to do what he thinks is in the best interest of Ohio residents. If he cannot take that authority on himself, Jordan, he should find a different line of work. That is not a good reason to oppose this bill.
I think a lot of it is that these governors that we have heard, when they hear, oh, wow, they preach all the time states and we're where we create and where we try things. And yet then when they actually have to do it and the federal government's not running everything for them and they can't just blame the feds, and that's on the cusp of happening, suddenly, oh, my, they'll have to govern as governors? You know, they're not just politicians who run around speaking at coffee breakfast and barbecues and fish fries. They're actually going to have to take from the federal government significant funds and decide how to utilize that. And these are supposed to be the smart guys. I love that. You know, and I'm not trying to beat up on John Kasich more than he deserves. He does, you know, but again, he tries to put himself out there as one of these smart kind of middle of the road governors who can figure out how to get things done on his own. Then why wouldn't he embrace this and love this? Because then he can use his own state as a factory for, hey, we'll all move to Ohio because John Kasich will provide such great health care to his people through this program. Or is he scared that he'll actually be responsible? I think it's that, folks. Politicians hate responsibility. We all know that. Harry, let me get into some specifics here. Than talked about the individual and employer mandate, but let's get into more about what this like block granting means to the state. So for people that are listening to the broadcast right now, so we understand individual employer mandate are gone. We understand the defunding of Planned Parenthood. There is a Medicaid expansion here as well, but that then again goes to the states.
So essentially, private insurance subsidies in the existing Affordable Health Care Act, along with the Medicaid expansion funding that will then be combined into a lump sum, which will then be given back to the states. They will essentially direct much of their own unique health care on a state-by-state basis. So yes, this will require state governors to actually do their jobs rather than rely on a ton of mandates from the federal government. In addition, states can apply for waivers.
Yeah, this is key. This is very key.
So under the Affordable Health Care Act, there was something called, or there is something called, minimum essential insurance coverage. States under the Graham-Cassidy bill will have discretion to apply for waivers. This might mean, Jordan, that an individual could purchase something that I call skinny insurance. In other words, to the extent that a waiver is granted to state A, individuals within those states who are simply looking for catastrophic insurance coverage might be able to purchase that in the future. That would drive down insurance costs.
All right. So, folks, we are trying to, again, we want to get you educated about all of this. There's, so on the waiver issue, the defunding, there's health savings account issue. All of this is included here. And we're focusing it on today because we didn't want to do this 2 days before a vote. We wanted to let you know before all the interest groups start running their ads, the left, the far right. You've got the Rand Paul types. We actually have a call about that, Logan. Let's take that before this break and then our last segment of the show. We'll go, take line five now. Last segment of the show coming up. We take all your phone calls. We're going to keep Harry here, Than here to answer all your questions as
Scott
well.
Scott is on the air from Pueblo, Colorado. You're on the air.
Okay, guys. Hey, great. Thanks for my call. Appreciate it. Hey, my question is this. You know, what is Rand Paul, you know, if this is a bipartisan bill, as you were saying, why does Rand Paul say, and this comes from his email, the D.C. liberal moderate establishment is trying to sneak a fake Obama repeal bill through the Senate. And I don't understand what his hang-up is. Does he understand that this goes in process, the repeal is goes in stages? Does he have to be such a perfectionist? And more importantly, here's my question, it takes away the public perception glory of Obama's name still attached to this thing, and it shows conservative progress.
You know, I think, listen, he does kind of put himself forward as this perfectionist libertarian. But I think, you know, he's a politician. You have got to make compromises. I don't think he would be punished at all by the people of Kentucky, who also have elected the majority leader, Mitch McConnell. So it's not like he's in a state where you must have his position or else he would be defeated in his next race. So, is he persuadable at all on this? I mean, you could see the president's calling him out by Twitter. Is he persuadable at all, or do we just give up on a Rand Paul type at this point?
It doesn't sound like he is, but the argument that I would make, Jordan, is he's got to start comparing this to Obamacare, not the health care bill that he would like, because what do we have now? We have Obamacare. That's what he's got to compare it against.
All right, folks, next segment, final segment, Logan, we take everybody's phone calls and comments.
That's right, one line's open, 1-800-684-3110. Have your voice heard today. Last chance for the day, 1-800-684-3110.
Imagine a global war on you, but your leaders refuse to acknowledge it. Imagine this denial resulting in hundreds of American deaths and a global genocide against Christians and other religious minorities. Imagine Russia, Iran, and jihadists around the world uniting to destroy us. This is the startling reality we now face. But it doesn't have to be this way. In his new book, Unholy Alliance, The Agenda Iran, Russia, and Jihadists Share for Conquering the World, ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow reveals the latest in a centuries-long attempt to export Islamic Sharia law and radical jihad around the world. With detailed history, in-depth legal case studies, and expert interviews, this book reveals the historic problem and the pressing solution. Order a copy of Unholy Alliance today. It's available right now at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever books are sold. You can also get it online at unholyalliancebook.com. This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. There are so many challenges facing our nation: the rise of ISIS, an emboldened North Korea, and here at home, continuing threats to your free speech and religious liberty, as well as an out-of-control bureaucracy in Washington. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. And if you want to make a difference, stand with the ACLJ and become a member today. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty, engaging the issues that matter most to you and your family, here at home and around the globe. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.
All right, folks, welcome back. We've got a full bank of calls. Logan, yeah, let's take it.
Let's go to Sandra in Georgia on line one. Start there. You're on the air.
Hey, Sandra.
Yes, hi. I'd just like to know, I've been told that there would be millions of people that would not be insured under this new health care bill. Can you tell me why and
yes, because they wouldn't be forced to buy insurance. In America, we're not going to force people to buy insurance. There's not going to be a mandate. Which right now there is, both for your employers, if you get it through there, or individuals. So there's two mandates that will be removed. That right there will mean that less people may decide to be insured, because we live in America, land of the free, and you can make these decisions. Whether or not they're good decisions or not always, we can debate. And certainly I think having insurance is a good decision if you can afford it. Right now the problem is many people cannot afford it. We're really talking about this narrow category of folks who do not get it from their employer, who make too much money to get it from the government already, who are in that category where basically they're getting insurance that's unusable and very expensive. But Harry, that is the point, is that that CBO number that comes out is because we're doing away with what conservatives can't stand, these mandates with penalties.
Absolutely. So one of the key points to remember is something called individual choice. This bill restores individual choice, which means that individual consumers can decide whether or not to purchase insurance. Many people have health insurance today, but it's essentially useless insurance unless they face something that is catastrophic. So why not allow people to choose to purchase catastrophic insurance, which would be a lot cheaper than what's available under Obamacare?
All right, Logan, right back to the phones we go.
All right, let's do it. Let's go to Kid, who's calling online too. Colorado, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a little bit concerned when I heard this. We're gonna give each of the states the responsibility in a large sum of money to take care of the health issues in their states. I'd like to know who's going to hold them accountable for making sure that they use
their
the
voters
money.
Can't. I mean, you're in Colorado. You choose who your state leaders are. It's a much more direct relationship than you have with your U.S. senator, who gets elected every 6 years and spends most of their time in Washington, D.C. Even your members of Congress who represent a district, so they care about really a district, but not so much the entire state. But you have lines of state leaders in each state. You have the governor, you have the lieutenant governor, you have your secretaries of state, on down. So, Ken, I mean, does that make sense now that it's going to be up to the leaders that you elect, the citizens of in your situation of Colorado elect? I hope that makes sense to you. I don't think that really needs a response from Ken. Maybe people have just forgotten in this day and age of the federal government controlling everything. It's like, why do we have governors? Why do we have – and we have them because, you know, in situations where we've had these hurricanes, natural disasters, and we're praying for those people in Mexico City, by the way, and the massive amount of loss of life there. But these examples are that it's really the state and local government that leads the way in the initial response. It's the federal government to provide back-end support. People sometimes have forgotten that after 8 years of President Obama. Logan?
All right, continuing on, let's go to Wendy, who's calling on line four in California. You're on the air.
Hi, greetings from the left coast.
Hello.
I have a question about the healthcare being under the IRS. Is there anything in the mix that is going to remove the control and the information given to the IRS?
Harry?
Will that be taken out from under them?
Well, the IRS was charged with the responsibility of collecting the penalty under Obamacare. So the new proposal, the Graham-Cassidy bill, would remove the individual mandate, and hence that would remove IRS's authority within the healthcare realm, as I understand it.
All right. So the IRS, in fact, would be their role limited under this legislation because there would be no more individual mandate or employer mandate for them to enforce. Back to the phones we go, Logan.
All right. Let's go to Terry in Maryland on line 6. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. You guys are just awesome. I don't know what we'd do without you.
Thank you, Terry.
But my question is, does this bill make it, can we buy insurance over state lines?
Not in this bill. And that's because we're using the reconciliation process. It's very limited what you can do. You can do a lot. You can't get to that. That's why we call it phase one. We support at the ACLJ and through our broadcast, we support the idea of buying insurance across state lines and opening up the marketplace. This is why we want to get the ball rolling in this legislation so that we can have these debates. We're not even to the point yet where we're really having an actual political debate of potential legislation, Harry, about doing that until we get something moving where Obamacare is in the past. Until then, the Democrats are going to always vote to keep it.
I think you're absolutely right. And if we stay on our present course with Obamacare, we are on the road to imploding the private insurance market, which will lead inevitably to a single-payer socialist healthcare system down the road. So this is only the first step. I clearly, from a policy perspective, support the ability of individuals to purchase insurance across state lines. This bill does not get us there, but it keeps that policy proposal on the table, for instance, for the next phase.
All right. Let's take these. We got two more calls. Let's take them.
Nancy in California, you're on the air, line 3.
Hi, guys. Hey, I have to tell you, I love you to pieces, but I have to disagree with you on one certain thing, and that is contacting the representatives. And I say that because conservatives have been taught throughout the years, you know, just accept things, keep your mouth shut, whatever. And this is kind of like when McConnell was getting all that trash because they kept telling him, you know, do the nuclear option. And he kind of waited, and then he finally did it. But, you know, I was looking at McCain's Twitter feed yesterday, and he's got people on there showing sick pictures of their kids and their families and saying, hey, please don't vote yes on this. So I think conservatives need to stand up and say, hey, senators, well, you need to do this.
Yeah, I mean, Nancy, I encourage everybody, grassroots activism is very important.
We discourage
what
that.
We were talking about is kind of a targeted campaign, and it would be a week long. There's obviously some you could kind of start focusing on now, whether it's the McCains and Murkowskis. But we also want to – you don't want to act so quickly that, you know, you're telling people over something they haven't read yet. It's coming together now. Now they're getting the hearing on it Monday. I mean, as we've said, we're going to be ready to go on targeting senators specifically Monday. It could come earlier than that, but that's why we kind of feel comfortable with now. Now, that's as an organization telling 2 million plus people a day, just on this radio broadcast, to pick up the phone and call. That's different than you deciding politically. If we do that, we've got to be ready as well. It's not that we can't turn that on immediately, but you can't then do it for a day. It'd have to be sustained campaign that we're promoting.
Right.
And for our perspective, that begins probably on Monday. We want to spend today getting people updated about it because people are talking about this on air, Logan, but they're not even explaining what's in it.
Absolutely. Let's try to grab the last call. Fred in New Orleans, you're on the air. Quickly, please.
I have an idea how to get the Dems on board for repeal. Since Obama made executive orders on exceptions, why can't Trump make an executive order that Congress needs to be on Obamacare? I'll bet it gets repealed on a bipartisan
executive
level within a month.
Executive orders cannot directly conflict with law that's been signed and on the books. You can use executive orders in the gray area. President Obama tried to do that in the Supreme Court. When he ever tried to do anything that was not in the gray area, they slapped it down 9-0. So you can't do that. The president has done everything he can through executive order on health care. He's already exempted everybody from the penalties through executive order. He cannot do more. We'll talk about it tomorrow on Jay Sekulow Live. Thanks for your calls and comments.
This is a critical time for our nation and the issues that matter most to you and your family. In a world immersed in chaos and confusion, the ACLJ is on the front lines defending life and liberty. If you haven't done so already, this is the perfect time to join the American Center for Law and Justice. Join now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or you can do so online, aclj.org.